What is, to you, the most interesting thing to talk about around the NHL on July 16th?
Outside of the menagerie of hockey insiders and the quality of their cottages, which is always for the sort of home and garden network fan in me, the most fascinating thing happening this point in the summer, it's still the lingering restricted free agent crop. I mean, as per usual, it feels like, most of these guys are waiting for one of them to sign to set the market that'll start the dominoes in motion for the rest of them. But, you know, you still have some real big names that are sort of still lingering out there. And does that necessarily mean we're going to see an offer sheet manifest for them? Probably not, because it probably would have happened already. And in the case of some of these guys in particular, like a Braden Point, for example, like they, don't want to leave. So I would say that's probably the only sort of lingering mystery of the off season so far, outside of, we wrote about this on Monday, outside of some of the more veteran UFAs that might be floating out there as well.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, Braden Point, like you mentioned, Mikko Rantanen, Mitch Marner's name has been mentioned sparingly in this market. But to me, he's not even the most fascinating RFA name out there. It's just, it seems pretty standard. There's a gap in what he thinks he should be making and what the Leafs think he should be making. The guy who's the most interesting to me is Patrick Laine, and haven't really heard anything for a while. How do you think that's going to end? Because I'm not convinced it's going to end with him as a Jet.
I think it will. I think, that's one of those situations where I would expect there to have been a lot more smoke than there's been if there was a situation in which he was going to be at loggerheads with them and they would have to move him at some point. I mean, the Jets right now, I think, have to do everything in their power to ensure that he's going to be there in the next few years, just because of a slight downtick, I think, in quality of their blue line and maybe the thought that if anything, they might have to take a step back before moving forward. I expect he'll still be there, but nothing shocking, and maybe the lack of news is more indicative of the market than anything else. But the Marner thing, come on, you're downplaying it, man. Like, that's
I don't know what you're talking about.
The thing about the Marner thing that's amazing is that he's the only guy, he's one of the few guys that I've ever seen whose camp apparently is making the argument that you could push aside comparable players, you could push aside the usual salary escalation for a player his age and of his abilities, and he's like a child walking past a department store window and pointing at Austin Matthews and saying, "I want that one." and that's what we're going with. And it's pretty great. I mean, it is a landmark negotiation for Mitch Marner.
Well, Greg, they share a jersey. But why doesn't Patrick Laine? I mean, we're all talking different types of players here. I get it. Why isn't Kyle Connor? Why isn't Matthew Tkachuk? I want that one too. Marner is a Maple Leaf, and that's what ties him to Austin Matthews.
Yeah, is it literally that's it? It's just that it's his teammate, and that's the only thing that he's using?
For sure. And not only is it his teammate, it's his teammate that they made whole before they made him whole, and then basically kind of said to him, "Well, here's what we're looking at." And he's probably like, "At any point during your discussion with my friend, did you say this is what we're looking at? You've got to take it." Probably not. So, I mean, there's that dynamic too. I mean, there's the personal relationship. There's the relationship of, who's the face of the franchise. And then you got the dad going on too. So there's a whole lot of other stuff going on that doesn't necessarily in play for a Kyle Connor, for example.
With Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. So this starts to touch, Greg, on a couple of things that bother me, and maybe they are related, maybe not. We see it not just in hockey. I cover baseball. We see it in baseball. And of course, one to 3 year guys have their salaries fully controlled. Then they're arbitration eligible 4 to 6. And then they're finally able to hit free agency. Hockey, it's different. But what we are finding is that sports science, analytics, data is confirming for us that when you hit 29, 30, 31 years old, apparently you are a corpse. and you can't do anything anymore. And so these players don't get paid for their production in the first two or three years of their career, or appropriately for their production through the first two or three years of their career on entry-level deals. If they have smart agents and smart people around them, or if they are smart themselves, and not all of them are, but some of them, they can look ahead and say, these people are going to tell me when I'm 28, 29, 30 years old, I'm done. I can't get term of 5, 6 years. I'm old. I need to be paid now. And so I think that that is what some of what is being fought for here. And then spinning off of that, I have this big complaint about the National Hockey League and the way things have played out post the latest lockout, where teams can no longer do the backsliding contracts that mitigate AAV, and all of a sudden good draft and develop teams like the Maple Leafs are hitting these number crunches before they've even won a playoff round. Well, a team in the same league like the Arizona Coyotes is allowed to acquire the dead contracts of Chris Pronger or Marian Hossa or Pavel Datsyuk or name names just to get to the salary floor without actually having to pay real money. I guess in my synopsis is the Toronto Maple Leafs are the true victims here.
Well, in Arizona's defense, they're a cap ceiling team all of a sudden. I don't know how the hell that happened, but it did. And those fans get very salty when you start, talking about them being an island for broken contracts. They're actually spending some money now, which is obviously good to see. I agree with you. I wrote about the salary cap at the end of last month on ESPN and how we should banish the hard cap and go with a soft cap luxury tax system, because I always had a problem with the idea that teams that properly draft and develop their talent have to make these Sophie's choice decisions on players because of the cap that's in place. And it takes away from the dynastic aspirations of teams. And I think that dynasty teams are better for sports, to be quite candid. It brings in casual fans to see a juggernaut versus seeing a different flavor each month. But I do like, in some ways, the control that teams have over their young assets. We're talking about, the number of years it takes to walk a guy up to unrestricted free agency. I kind of like that. I mean, I like the fact that if you're a team, to throw it out there again, like Arizona, and you say, get let's say that for once they draft well and get a franchise player, that player is tethered to Glendale for the first, 7 years of their career. I think that's a good thing for the NHL overall, like this restricted free agent status. But I agree with you that you end up paying guys for stuff that they already did. And when you do that, you end up with things like the Brent Seabrook contract, which we discussed on Puck Soup this past week, which was clearly compensation for services already rendered versus anything Brent Seabrook was going to do after his 30th birthday.
Greg Wyshynski is a senior hockey writer for ESPN. He's with us on Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We were talking about teams, how are we going to be able to keep the great young players that we draft? But we've completely glossed over great young players that we acquired by fleecing Peter Chiarelli. And on that note, the New Jersey Devils have basically, it seems like, 1 year to convince Taylor Hall to stay a New Jersey Devil. Heading into the season, I guess still in the dead of the offseason, how do you like their chances? Because they've made some improvements this offseason.
I came into the summer thinking it was 60-40. I think it's still, maybe it's up to 65-35 if they keep him. The bottom line is that, this is a team that's going to be a lot better and right now has, some of the building blocks of a championship contender that you need, two great centers, top flight defensemen. They don't have the goalie at all right now. I'm not a huge Mackenzie Blackwood fan necessarily. But the thing about Taylor Hall is that I think he loves the organization. I think he feels appreciated by the organization. He clearly was enthusiastic about bringing PK Subban to New Jersey. But the question is how far away are the Devils from winning a cup? Because this is the game for Taylor Hall right now. He wants to win a Stanley Cup. And if it's not going to be with the Devils because they simply don't have the depth of talent they've got some high-end talent, but they don't have the depth of talent, then it'll be somewhere else. And, you know, they're going to do their due diligence to try to convince this guy to stick around and be the face of the franchise along with Jack Hughes. But it remains to be seen. It's a process. He's not wavered from what he said after the season. But that's still a little bit disconcerting if you're a Devils fan, I think.
So there's the team that he's on and will hopefully stay with, I'm sure, if you're one Greg Wyshynski. Then there's the team that he came from in the Edmonton Oilers. And what we were sort of talking about, well, what I was ranting about on the podcast anyway, at the end of the season, because the Oilers, I recently watched some Oilers highlights from April, because that's what I do in July. And that team could not wait to get off the ice. And I just looked at what they've done this offseason, you know, besides the front office moves that Ken Holland made, which I'm actually on board with. They signed Marcus Granlund, like not even the best Granlund. They swapped goalies with the Flames. They got Mike Smith to go with Mikko Koskinen. Let's pretend this is it. This is all the Oilers end up doing. And let's pretend that they have basically the same season that they did last year, because to be frank, there's no reason to really assume that it'll be different. They got a 50-goal season out of Leon Draisaitl and were still terrible. Can you imagine an NHL where Connor McDavid requests a trade? Yes, I am being that guy.
Sure. I mean, why not, right? Like, if I know that he's talked about the you know, commitment to the franchise with the contract and the whole thing. But you could very much see him saying, I can't do this anymore. Now, the question is that a cool thing to do if you're Connor McDavid? And I know that there's a certain mindset out there of like being like, well, you know, he's wasting away in Edmonton. He's just, you know, the career is flittering away because of the ineptitude of management. And if nothing else, the inaction this summer, I think, is the greatest example of how Peter Chiarelli completely screwed up that team during his time there than anything else. But at the end of the day, you signed the franchise player contract, right? Like, you committed to the franchise. You said, through thick and through thin, I'm going to see this thing through. And I know that the argument is, well, look at the roster when he signed that deal. And I'm like, yeah, but he signed a deal. Like, he could have done more of a Matthews deal and said 5 years. He didn't. He went long-term with him. So there's a part of me that will be completely sympathetic to Connor McDavid, because you are the best player in the world and no one can watch you after April 15th because you're never in the playoffs. But there's another part of me that's like, you know what, maybe on your commitment, if you're going to say that you're the franchise guy, you kind of have to see this thing through. And that's your lot in life. That's the decision that you made.
With Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. So let's pretend, Greg, that Ken Holland is the guy in Edmonton who actually does whatever it is that needs to be done correctly. Can't promise that. I mean, God knows they've tried with others. But how long does this take? Given that you have the best player in the game, if Ken Holland does this right, how long do you think it takes?
God, I mean, if you look at that roster right now and the mere total lack of quality offensive depth that they have on it, you know, they've got a few okay pieces on the blue line, but the goaltending is specious at best. I mean, are we looking at like 3 years? I mean, it's a daunting task. I will say that they have a ton of money coming off the cap, I think, next summer. I'm looking at Cap Friendly right now, and they have in the neighborhood of, you know, $24 million in open cap space. But the problem is that they only have 10 players signed through the 2021 season. So it's like you got some cap space, but you're so top heavy as far as your cap goes that you need to spend it to fill out your roster. So if nothing else, Kenny Holland will have the opportunity to put his stamp on the team with so many players that are up. The question is it still being Edmonton and it's still being a team that doesn't necessarily have a bevy of tradable assets to acquire other players you know, what's that process going to look like? It is a mountain to climb if you're Ken Holland, because of the way that Peter Chiarelli strip mined this roster for bad trades and made some horrible signings and handed out no move clauses that are just idiotic in retrospect. But you know, he's I still think he's a smart hockey man. I don't think that the world passed him by. I just think that this is, you know, this is an enormous task for anybody to try to figure out, because of how completely messed up that cap is and how messed up that team is.
I'm definitely with you that it's completely messed up, and they're my obsession right now. I feel like the Leafs were awful for so long that it just became my thing to try to figure out how to fix broken teams. And so I basically moved on to the Oilers. The thing that gets me, and why I'm always afraid to write them off and say, oh yeah, it's going to take 3 years or whatever, is to me, what they lack is the most plentiful resource in the NHL, which is wingers. Like, it's amazing to me they can't find wingers to play with, you know, have Draisaitl down the middle, have McDavid down the middle. If they wanted to, if they just got some wingers who were competent, they could have all three of those guys play center in McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins if they wanted. So it scares me to write them off for too long, because I just think when you have the best player in the world, you've always got a shot, right?
Yeah, in theory. I think my issue with Draisaitl is that I don't know if he can be Malkin to Connor's Sid quite yet. I don't necessarily know if he's proven that yet. And I think that it's obvious that his best offensive output has been coming while on the wing of Connor McDavid. And so you're paying him $8.5 million a season or whatever it is in that neighborhood to be a top-line winger, which is fine. I mean, the guy pops 50 goals. I mean, that's a very valuable commodity. Problem being is that you drafted him to be Malkin. So I don't necessarily know if it's just a matter of, can we get Leon the wingers that he needs versus can Leon be that guy for us, which I think is the real issue. Well, one of a billion issues, but one of the real issues there. It'd be like if the Devils – you know, drafted Jack Hughes to be the center with Nico Hischier for the next, you know, 8 years, and then all of a sudden all the prognostications about him having to play the wing come true. Well, it kind of, you know, hurts your development as a roster, that all of a sudden the franchise center that you think you have becomes a franchise top-line winger. And I think that's part of the Oilers' problem right now, is that in theory it should be a line anchored by Draisaitl, a line anchored by McDavid, and you go to war with that, but it's not been the case in the last 2 years.
Greg Wyshynski is the senior hockey writer for ESPN at Sportsnet Today. Scott MacArthur, Steve Dangle, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Greg, we've talked about a lot of star players so far on this phone call, but we haven't gotten to the biggest one. Jake Gardner. Why hasn't he signed anywhere yet? This is weird, right?
It is a little weird, and I don't know if it's a matter of – I mean, my first thought whenever this sort of thing lingers for a while is either he's not getting the suitors that he wanted, or he's looking for something, be it, you know, average annual value, or be it term of contract, that he's just not getting in the offers either and is trying to wait it out and see if something opens up. We talked about him on Monday in our roundtable. I go back to a team we've talked about a few times during this call, which is the Devils, and think that Gardner would be a really shrewd acquisition there. They've got both Sammy Vatanen and Andy Green on the left side coming off their cap next summer. You know, in both cases, they might not be players that you bring back. Gardner could be a guy that sort of solidifies that position, adds a good offensive pop from a position in which, even with the acquisition of PK Subban, they could use more of. That would seem like a pretty logical landing site, but, you know, the smart money has always been on Montreal making this thing work somehow. So you probably have to go with that until proven otherwise, but it has taken quite a while, and it's been kind of curious as to why.